So I'm Nick Jones, and I teach in the English department, and I come at the work of looking at art with an interest in how texts, narratives, and poems relate to these representations.
I'm Peter Swenson. I teach in the Tamara department in the conservatory. Much of the music that I compose has to do with an experience of real-world places and environments, and so I come at these works, especially works involving landscape, with an interest in how the artist takes the experience of place and maps that into a visual experience for the viewer, much the same way that I try and do that sonically for the listener.
And we've been teaching together this spring a course called Landscapes, Soundscapes, and Wordscapes. And the reason we brought our students in to look at Joseph Wright painting and some others in the galleries, we're interested in how landscapes are not realistic snapshots, but are mediated by people's experience.
Any of the works in the collection from this time period draw a lot on this idea of memory and of documenting landscapes that may be quickly disappearing because of industrialization. And I think that this is a good example, and Nick, maybe you'll speak to this more, but we see a very placid, very natural landscape. We have natural elements, trees and rocks and water. And we don't see the human influence on the landscape that surely exists nearby. But interesting here that the artist is choosing to exclude those things. And I wonder whether or not that intentional exclusion of those things visually is a sort of romantic notion of trying to hold on to the natural world in the face of this great change. Certainly whether it's just a visual artistic choice. But I think that anything we discuss in this time period has to ask that question.
When we came to talk about this painting, to talk in front of this painting about landscape, we had also been reading, and in particular, it's Wordsworth's Tintern Abbey poem that describes how returning to the landscape of a river valley near the headwaters of the Wye River, probably quite similar to the one that Joseph Wright depicts in the painting, how the experience of returning to that 7 years after first experiencing it makes an enormous difference in his life. He has gone through psychological problems, enormous changes have happened politically in the nation, cataclysmic changes that he alludes to briefly but very powerfully as episodes that he could only have survived and learned from because he had the landscape and the experience of the landscape in his bones, in his body, in his soul, and could remember these things. Even remembering them wrongly, he says, was part of what kept him alive and kept him healthy.
The discussion reminds me that it's much, much later that we have the ability to do this with sound, that it's not until the second half of the 20th century that we have recording technology to go out and capture an impression of a landscape. I think we forget sometimes how much earlier visual artists are able to represent a place in a specific way, and that composers, at this time at least, at the turn of the 19th century, certainly are dealing with the notion of place, and there's lots of very dramatic music being written about experiences at sea, and certainly particular locations. And I love the fact that we have these comparatively early memories of landscapes such as this one. And of course, I, you know, as a composer, would love to have heard this soundscape versus how maybe it sounds today. But it's not until much, much later, really pretty recently, that we have the ability to go out and, like the painter, create an impression of a place through sound. And it's interesting to talk about memory reaching back visually these hundreds of years when our sonic memory is really much younger by comparison.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, which was produced by the Allen Memorial Art Museum at Oberlin College. Be sure to check back for more additions to this series at our website.